Coming up on today's show...
Eric Stonestreet called me and he was an actor on Modern Family. He's a really amazing guy. And he's like, hey, man, do you think you'd ever want to play a couple with Darius Rucker? I was like, what? Of course. And so he's like, well, he's right here.
She likes Nick Drake and I like the milk carton kids.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net. Or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account.
She likes the Weepies and I like the Brothers. And we both love
joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Detroit, my guest is a singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist who last year released 4 singles and was featured on 6 others. In 2023, he finished as a semi-finalist on season 18 of America's Got Talent, and that same year beat out thousands of competitors to win TikTok's Greatest Talent. He has performed at notable venues and events, ranging from NPR's Mountain Stage to being an Americana Fest spotlight artist to the famed Bluebird Cafe in Nashville and Whiskey Jam, among others. His top 5 songs on Spotify alone have been streamed close to 5.9 million times. He has 1 million followers on TikTok, and his official YouTube channel has a combined total of 4.5 million video views. You've been hearing a song of his called Lightning Bugs. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Philip Bowen.
Hey, Bruce, thank you so much for having me on today.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Thank you ever so much for making time to talk with me today.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
Let's get started by having you share with the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing called Lightning Bugs.
Yeah, sure. You know, Lightning Bugs is one of those songs that has just resonated with people everywhere I play it. And, you know, as you kind of hear in the lyrics, it's about two very different people who find joy in some similar things like musical artists and the beauty of being outside together. And, I like that song as one to kind of lead off with, because as a songwriter, sometimes these ideas just come to you at the weirdest times. And that was, I had just been on a trip with my now wife and I was pumping gas at a gas station in West Virginia. And the tune for this song just came in my head, you know, I put it into a voice memo. And when we got home that evening, I ran downstairs, grabbed my guitar and wrote out these lyrics for Lightning Bugs. And it ended up being one of my most loved songs when I play it out places. So it's been kind of fun to see that one evolve over time.
Okay, I have a couple of follow-up questions based on what you just said. Number one is, what about the title? What about the hook? Where does the concept of Lightning Bugs come in, being that I was talking over it and the audience couldn't hear the lyrics?
Sure, yeah. So the title comes from maybe what you might call these little bugs with the glowing bottoms called fireflies. A lot of places we call them lightning bugs in Appalachia. And so the title comes from when you are in my part of the country that I grew up in, and you look up in the mountains in the summertime, they're almost glowing this neon green color because there's so many lightning bugs up on the hills. And so that was kind of what inspired the initial idea for the song. And that's kind of where the title comes from.
Okay. And my other follow-up was, you said that you got home, you grabbed your guitar, and you started writing the song. Now, some people are coming to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment because they're fans of yours, they're followers, and hello and welcome, by the way. Thank you, folks, for coming to listen to my interview with Philip. But they're going to say, oh, writing on the guitar, but I know him as a fiddle player. So just talk about your songwriting process. Some people are going to say, he's a fiddle player. I'm here to say, well, of course he's going to write it on guitar. And you might school me, Philip, and go, no, you can write a song on the fiddle. So just walk us through that songwriting process, whether it's Lightning Bugs or just in general.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, one of the reasons I first wanted to learn the guitar, and I picked up the guitar in college, but, you know, the fiddle is my first love. I learned it when I was a really, really young age. And the reason I wanted to learn the guitar was because I was having a lot of trouble using the fiddle as kind of a rhythm instrument or like as a writing instrument. And I do write with the fiddle, but I write more of my little hooks and those kind of melody call outs and stuff like that. So I love to do my melody writing and things like that on the fiddle. And so for me, my process might be a little bit unique because of my background with that instrument. But a lot of times I'll try to figure out some of the chord structure on the guitar or even the piano. And then if I get stuck on melody, sometimes I'll sing gibberish, but sometimes what I do is I'll record that little chord cadence and then I will get the fiddle out and I'll just mess around with melody on the fiddle instead of my voice. And then I'll be like, oh, I could sing it this way, because the fiddle is the closest instrument sonically to the human voice, which is why it kind of pulls at those heartstrings sometimes when you hear it.
Wow.
And so I use the fiddle to write melodies a lot, or the vocal line or the top line, as we say in music. And then I use the guitar and the piano a lot as my kind of accordion instrument to figure out like kind of the structure of the song.
I wonder, did you ever have to have a sit down talk with yourself, or did a producer ever have to have a sit down talk with you and say, you know, I know that's your first instrument, but you don't have to have fiddle in every song.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, and for me, just like you said, like it's something that I love. I love having it as a part of my music. It's a big part of me because I've played it for so long and I love being able to voice through that instrument. But I think a great part about maturing as a musician is kind of knowing that power of knowing your spots when you're playing, whether you're playing with others in a band or whether you're playing with yourself or recording your own music. It's a really good talent to learn. Like, there's so much power in figuring out those spots to really make it shine. And it almost comes out more effectively when you can pick those key spots versus having it always present.
Yeah, because what I was picturing is you being three quarters of the way through writing a song and stopping yourself and going, wait a minute, I haven't put any fiddle into this song yet. Like, where, I got to find a place. And then you stop yourself and you go, no, the song is good as it is. I don't have to put fiddle in just because that's my original instrument. This song is going to stand alone just fine without it. And so that's kind of what I was picturing when I asked you that question, is not forcing it in a place where you do recognize your strength. Hey, I'm onto a really good song here. I got a nice guitar groove going and I'm going to flex my muscle here and just go to the finish line.
Exactly. And in fact, what you hear in that recording of Lightning Bugs, you might hear a little couple fiddle licks and stuff like that in those interludes. But one of the things I do like to do as a challenge to myself is, like, the fiddle that you hear in the recording of Lightning Bugs, I had never played the fiddle on that song for 1 second until the studio day.
Whoa.
A lot of times an instrument like the fiddle is a color instrument in the studio, which means everything else is pretty much done. And you go with the fiddle and you add extra color to the song. And so sometimes what I like to do as kind of a challenge is I just want to see what comes out organically as I hear the song. And so with Lightning Bugs specifically, the fiddle that you hear in that recording literally was me walking into the booth. I'm like, let's just see what comes out.
Wow.
And that's exactly it. And I had never practiced the fiddle part for that or anything. And it's just kind of what came out after hearing what we had worked up with the vocals and the guitar and everything else.
Have you done that on other songs where you've gone into the booth and said, let's just see what comes out, and then ended up being disappointed and said, okay, never mind, I'm not feeling it. We got nothing here. We tried. Let's just move on and not put anything in.
Sometimes, but for me, the way that I experience music is so visual. And, you know, I didn't have a word for this for a very long time, but the reason I close my eyes so much when I play the fiddle is I truly see it like colors. That's how I experience music. And so the reason that, like, on these social media videos and stuff like that, when you see me kind of playing over all these random types of songs, and the reason that I can play over a song that I've never even heard before of any style or genre with the fiddle is that all I need to do is close my eyes and I can, all of a sudden, I kind of see this music colored in front of me like a picture almost. It's very hard to explain.
Wow.
But then it's just like, here we go. And so even when I do studio work, like, I just worked on a track for Sam Barber recently, and they sent me the stems and everything, and I sat down and listened to it. The song is Thought of You. It's out already. And when I listened to that, like, I was just like, all right, I'm going to try it this way. I sent it back to them. They're like, yes, keep doing that. That's exactly what we want. And so most of the time, I like to try to have a conversation with the song, with the fiddle. And so, you know, I try to be less of a standalone thing than more of, like, you know, more complimentary, like, what is the song telling me, and just try to pick up on that vibe and add to it in a meaningful way without, like you said, instead of like making it a distraction, make it something that really complements what's already there and just brings it to life in a different way.
Yeah, and something about what you're saying is reminding me, audience, if you didn't hear it, I'll put a link on the show page for Philip's episode on my podcast website, nhte.net, to last month, December 11th. It was episode 565. J.D. Hinton, he talked about the fact that he gets a picture in his head before he even starts writing. And the discussion that he and I had in that interview was, a lot of artists will say, as I was writing the song, I was seeing what the music video is going to end up being. And he said, no, I get that even before. That's what inspires me to start writing. So I love, Philip, the way that you're going with it and saying, I can take someone else's song that I've never heard before, regardless of the genre, and I just close my eyes and I start seeing a color and I'm off and going. One last question before I move on. I love where we're going with all this. This has been such a great start to the show. But when you said before that violin, that fiddle is the closest thing to the human voice, is that opinion or is that fact?
That's fact. And I'm not a scientist, but I've had many people. And the first person that I ever heard say that to me was Larry Gross, who is like the legendary originator, producer, showrunner of Mountain Stage. We were talking about how there's just something really special about people that can make other people feel something through their instrument, you know?
Yeah.
More than just the technique, but if you can make people feel something with how you play. And he was saying the reason for this deep, deep tradition of fiddle in Appalachia. And he said, there's something about the fiddle that's really special because he was the first person that told me that little factoid about how it's the closest sonically to the human voice. I've heard that multiple times from people in music. So I do believe that is a fact.
Okay. And audience, let's face it. We all know as soon as he said that, as soon as Philip said it the first time earlier in our conversation, we all know that the second that you start to hear a fiddle play in a song, you get that little cry in your throat and you go, oh my gosh, this is going to be really sad, right? You're watching a movie or whatever. So I don't doubt it. I just wondered where that came from. Just for the record, Lightning Bugs was off your old Kanawha album, which came out in August of 2023. That is considered your debut album yet. I went on iTunes and sorted all the releases under Philip Bowen by date, and there were 39 before that, singles, features, live releases. So I want people to understand, you've got quite the catalog despite that release from a year and a half ago being considered your debut album, which, oh, by the way, had 13 songs on it.
Yeah. Well, you know, for me, the body of work that I was trying to put out there, and a lot of the reason a lot of those older ones are still there, is because for me, you know, when all this stuff started coming to fruition for me and just trying to make it something after, you know, putting it aside for so long, was I just wanted to start getting stuff out there. And as it was growing, people were asking me like, oh, well, like, you only have one song. Is there more? And so a lot of those very early live recordings are truly that. Like, it was just me figuring out, bootstrapping it in my little makeshift home, quote-unquote, studio, and trying to figure out how to get stuff out into the world. And I was just writing furiously, trying to get these songs out there so I could, you know, try to make this a real thing. And anybody that's ever done music for any amount of time knows how hard it is to be heard. And it's such a saturated environment. And so I was just trying to write and go. And so, yeah, that's how especially a lot of that early stuff. And I've always been really intent on trying to collaborate on different types of projects with different folks, and also just write with a really good variant so that I can, you know, just get my stuff out there and into the world.
But I'm applauding you because for Old Kanawha to have 13 songs on it, and this time I will say, and be your debut album, I think there's a lot of artists out there that struggle to get to 10 for their debut album. And you really showed people, hey, I got a lot to say musically.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a little bit of that is that little chip on your shoulder that you have, which I think is good for you when you're trying to make it. And for me, you know, I have a really interesting relationship with the fiddle thing because I love it so much. It's obviously a huge part of what I do. But I've always struggled to have it both ways, so to speak, in the sense of, like, a lot of times people will know me for just one thing or the other thing. So I'll only know you for this. Like, I've only ever seen you play the fiddle, but I didn't know you could write. I didn't know you could play. I didn't know you did the artist thing and vice versa. And so for me, it was really important for me to have the songs stand on their own two feet versus like, I'm only listening to your songs because I liked the way you covered this song on your fiddle or whatever the case might be.
Mm.
And so I definitely felt like I maybe had a little chip on my shoulder, which is healthy, I think, in the sense if you're going to try to write well, you got to treat your writing like a job and do it like every day and really try to be intentional about it. But I really wanted to have those songs out there standing up well and show people that, like, hey, I love the fiddle. It's always going to be part of what I do. But this is also something I'm really passionate about, that I think that these stories can mean something to you if you'll take a second to listen to them. And that's kind of where that I think ended up being 13, because we started out with 7 or 8, and then I thought I had more to say, so I went back in and did a round 2, and I'm glad we ended up getting them there.
Yeah, you read my mind. I'm glad that you covered that. So 13, folks, when you go look for the release, have some time set aside. Listen to the whole thing. Don't just stream one or two singles or download, purchase one or two singles, because as you're hearing, Philip has quite the catalog and had a lot that he wanted to share with people on that debut release. So let's start getting into your background, both personal and musical. First, let's just have you talk about where you grew up, because I know that's important to you, and people who look you up on Twitter will even see it in the banner across your page on there.
Yeah, I mean, that banner says Appalachia Forever, and I think it is a much beloved and much misunderstood, sometimes much maligned region, but I think what's really unique about that area of the country, West Virginia specifically, which is where I grew up, is that you'll be hard-pressed to ever meet someone from West Virginia who doesn't want to tell you that they're from there in about 2 seconds. Like, they want you to know, hey, I'm from West Virginia, and I need you to know that. I'm proud of being from West Virginia. Mm. And so I grew up in very small-town America, a town of less than 1,500 people called Montgomery, West Virginia, in Fayette County. West Virginia, and beautiful little spot right there on the Kanawha River, which is kind of what my album's named after. I grew up, literally, the Kanawha River was in our backyard growing up, you know, in a little valley, the Kanawha Valley, with mountains on either side. So Montgomery sits in a little valley with mountains on either side and the river running right through it. And so, yeah, beautiful spot. We're about 30 minutes from the capital of West Virginia, which is Charleston, West Virginia. So to me, that was like the big city growing up, but you know, lots of tradition there in terms of, like, you know, everything from music to just like family. And my great grandparents on my mother's side immigrated to the United States from Lebanon. There's a huge Lebanese population in West Virginia. It's kind of like Greek Orthodox and Catholic Lebanese that immigrated during, you know, the early 1900s, kind of pre-World War One even. And so some stayed in New York, some moved to West Virginia. It's a really interesting kind of amalgamation of cultures, because Appalachia is like where I grew up was like, you had a lot of Scotch Irish immigrants, some Italian immigrants, and Lebanese immigrants, and these kind of like big family heavy communities all kind of coming together. And so it was a really special place to grow up, really nice place to grow up.
Yeah, I can tell. And I think you were also fortunate to be in the location that you were, because you're right by the Kanawha River, which kind of gives you a totally different environment from only being 30 minutes away from the capital and going into city life and seeing kind of both experiences there.
Correct. It was a nice kind of perspective. And like a lot of things in life, when I went to college, I wanted to go somewhere different and just get away. And I went to college in Florida, and it was in Tampa Bay, and it was a nice experience. But I never missed or appreciated home so bad as after I left.
Mm.
You know, I'd never appreciated the beauty of those mountains right in your backyard and being able to just sit there on the river and just like the culture there, how just warm it is. You know, like John F. Kennedy had a great saying when he visited West Virginia, and he was like, you know, the sun doesn't always shine in West Virginia, but the people do. And I think that's really indicative when you're there, that it's not the richest place. It has problems like anywhere else. But the people there, it's just a really interesting culture when you're there. And so, so I missed it awful bad, you know, when I left. And then I think that kind of was a long way to come around to inspire what a lot has ended up happening in my life, my kind of love for home and that region.
This episode is being released as I am starting into a long week in Anaheim, California, taking part in the NAMM show. That is the National Association of Music Merchants. If you are hearing this interview in its initial days of release and are also attending, please get in touch so we can connect in person. For those that are not familiar with it, visit NAMM.org. Like I said, National Association of Music Merchants, so that's NAMM.org. A massive event at the Anaheim Convention Center. This Sunday, January 26th, I will drive from Anaheim up to Los Angeles and will be there until flying back home to Tampa Bay on January 29th. 1 week later, though, I will be flying back out west again. If you or someone you know are or will be in Northern California, get in touch and let's meet. I will be one of the speakers at the 21st San Francisco Writers Conference, which takes place February 6 to 9. Visit sfwriters.org for more details on that event. Just to clarify, that is for writers of literature, books, not music. Soon I will be giving out details about where I'm traveling in March and April as well. Keep up with it all through this show, the weekly e-newsletter, and or social media. I would love to meet you somewhere out on the road so I can say hello and thank you for listening to this podcast. Philip, you were talking about having grown up in Appalachia. What about your background with music, though?
Yeah, I think those things go hand in hand. I've been playing the fiddle since I was 4 years old. Hmm. You know, kind of how that came to be is I was watching Sesame Street, as you do, at four. My older sister, Laura, was already playing the piano, and there was a famous violinist named Itzhak Perlman as a guest on Sesame Street, and I just became so fixated on this violin playing. And of course, I grew up in a part of the country. I was just telling a friend of mine this in Michigan here the other day, but Appalachia, especially where I grew up, it's hard to even have like a birthday party, a family event, a get together. People, there's just always music around, always. People bring their instruments and stuff like that. So I was already seeing and hearing music around me all the time, from church to family gatherings and stuff like that. So I was familiar with this instrument, seeing other people play it and stuff like that. And so, I just was so dialed in on wanting to play it. And so there was a very small little community college in our town. And the music professor there was giving music lessons to kids. He was an oboe player. He didn't play the strings, but he knew music. So he kind of helped me get started. And then my dad would take me to the Vandalia Gathering in Charleston every year. It's like a big bluegrass kind of Americana gathering. And people just kind of sit out on the lawn, and there's all these different instruments, players of all types, and you can sit and jam, and there's, you know, writing contests and fiddle contests and banjo contests and all these different things. And so, you know, I mean, I entered the fiddle contest when I was 5 years old. Like, there's a picture at my parents' house, you know, me and the paper, like, playing the fiddle at five. So, you know, like, it's just part of your life there. And I think if there's anything we're good at in Appalachia, it's storytelling. And so I just became so in love in terms of the songwriting stuff of, like, you know, people like John Prine and James Taylor and stuff like that. These people that would do this kind of storytelling style of writing, Bob Dylan, you know, I just loved that. And I just wanted to do that. That was kind of my journey. And I never stopped playing music all through high school.
But wait a minute, because when was this that you decided that you were so fascinated by the songwriting element? What age were you when you started songwriting?
You know, I don't know the exact age. My mom recently sent me like a picture of like one of my notebooks she had found while she was cleaning the attic. And it was from as a sophomore or a junior in high school. And like, I was just writing out a bunch of lyrics and stuff like that. So I think in high school, I started messing around with poetry first, you know, just kind of writing, you know, poetry. And then I would always put it to music with how my mind would work.
Okay.
And of course, that's a song, you know, that was kind of when I started kind of messing around with it.
And what about guitar? When did that start to come into play?
Guitar started my freshman year of college. So I went to college in Tampa Bay, Florida, and one of my buddies down the hall was playing the guitar, and he had like a Martin guitar. And I was like, man, you got to teach me how to do that. Like, you know, sometimes we'd go onto the beach, or we'd go to like this little town in Tampa called Safety Harbor, and we would jam at this pizza restaurant called Captain's Pizza. And this guy would pay us in pizza, sometimes pizza and beer and salad, just to play and jam, you know? And so I would notice, I was like, man, like, this guy's singing his own songs and the girls are just flocking to him, you know, like, as you do at 18, 19. But I could not sing and play the fiddle for the life of me. And so I'd go in his room, I'd steal his guitar all the time and just try to teach myself. And then my dad that summer bought me my first acoustic guitar, this little Fender acoustic with a DVD that came with it that showed you some chords and stuff. And I didn't put that thing down the whole summer until I could play strings and chords together. And then I just was obsessed with, you know, to try to get that down, sing while I played. And then I just went crazy with that. So I really started playing the guitar and writing together during my college years.
But just to clarify, University of Tampa, you were there for, I believe it was, what, a business degree?
Yeah, so first I went to an undergrad. I went to a very small little liberal arts school in Clearwater, which it's not even there anymore. It was like Clearwater Christian in Clearwater, Florida. And then I kind of chickened out of doing music for a career. I had a music scholarship for about half my college in my undergrad. And I had some buddies that had graduated ahead of me that had gone, hey, we're going to sell everything we have. We're going to Nashville, you know, and it was not going well for them. And it was freaking me out. Like, I was like, oh man, you know, cause I'm like, man, I could play the fiddle. I mean, I can go there and make money tomorrow. Like, it's going to be so fun. And then these guys were good musicians and they just, it wasn't working. And it was, I was like, oh no. Like, my parents are both, you know, kind of successful at what they do, bootstrapped it themselves, you know, and I was so scared of, you know, being a starving artist. Truly. And so I was like, well, I'm going to go to grad school and get my business degree. And so I went to the University of Tampa and got my MBA in marketing, which ended up serving me well, you know, as all this has come to be. But so I went and got my MBA in marketing. And I would still do music for fun, kind of on the side. But then I just kind of put it away, put the dream aside, honestly. I was like, okay, I got to get serious about my life. And you know, I thought it was kind of done.
So where are we timeline-wise? Walk us through, you know, what years are you referring to as it relates to going off on a corporate career and then obviously finding your way back to music?
All right, so let's say around maybe 2000. And this is where my journey is like a little different. You know, I'm married. I've got young kids.
Oh.
I'm not like 25. You know what I mean? So like this is maybe like, let's say 2010. I get my MBA at Tampa, say, okay, I need to go get a job. And the economy is terrible. I mean, it just is like crashing hardcore around this time. So I have an MBA and I can't find a job anywhere. And so I end up working at this place. It's still there on Gulf to Bay Boulevard in Clearwater, Florida. It's called Robert's Christmas Wonderland. And I am humbled. So I have stopped doing music. I have an MBA and I'm working for $9 an hour at a Christmas tree store on Gulf to Bay Boulevard. And I'm not feeling great about my life. And I'm just like, oh, man. But I'm working hard because I'm, you know, I'm wanting to get engaged to my now wife, Jamie. And I'm just like, okay, I need to, you know, I got to pay the bills for my rent. And it was not, I was really discouraged. And so anyways, I go to work in Tampa. I finally get a kind of corporate job at a tech company. And I worked there for about 5 years. And it got sold, which is how we got to Michigan. So this is like a little bit of a journey for me. And then so right before COVID, I had got invited with a friend to go to a music conference in Nashville. And so I was like, you know, I'll go with you, man. You know, it's been a while. Like I said, I would do music for fun with friends and people would always ask me to play for them and stuff. But, you know, I'm a dad at this point and I got a corporate career and this and that. And so I get invited to this conference and the whole way home, all I can think about is how I should have never stopped doing music. I mean, it's eating me alive, truly eating me alive. Like I am miserable. So I made this promise to myself. The note is still on my desk in the studio. And I made a decision going into 2020 that I was going to do something music related, create every day, even if it was something small and just see what happens. I was like, I'm not going to clock out of this life without trying this for real one more time. And, I did that and I had a few little local gigs lined up, like quote unquote gigs, like coffee shop gigs to try to play in front of people again here in Detroit. Yeah. But then everything got shut down because of COVID. And, so I started doing some things online just to try to keep the promise to myself.
Okay.
And then, everybody was stuck at home. I started doing these shows online and boom, 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 boom. And just, I mean, it was little by little. I mean, this is year five of this for me, but we're talking like I was, you know, as you can tell, I'm like a little bit passionate about this. You know, I was in an unfinished basement with an old lamp duct taped to my ceiling beams for lighting. I was using iPhone headphones to record music, you know, just to get something out the door.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So, like, some people will tell me, like, oh, man, you're so – you feel so lucky. This happened so fast. I was like, man, this is not
– Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I feel fortunate, but this has been a lot of, you know, work, and it's been quite a journey. So now the things that have happened for me recently, the past 2-3 years especially, now that all I do is music – it honestly is a dream come true, honestly, Bruce. Like, I just,
I can tell.
I really felt that it had passed me by.
Yeah, I mean, now that we've heard your story, but I have a question for you, though, because, you know, what a big year 2023 was for you. And so I love that we hear now how you got to all this, you know, and going on social media and building it. So all of a sudden you get to 2023, you release the album, which we heard about. You were a semifinalist on America's Got Talent. And you won TikTok's Greatest Talent. This is all in 2023. So those three things in particular, I'm only talking about the album America's Got Talent and TikTok's Greatest Talent. Were you doing each of those kind of like, in other words, was everything just lining up at once for you? Or were you trying to build momentum from one of those to build the others? You know, well, if I release my album, maybe I'll get on America's Got Talent. And if I get on America's Got Talent, maybe I can enter TikTok. Just walk us through your mindset and your strategy of all those things that happened in 2023, unless it's like, honestly, Bruce, like the planets just aligned that year.
Well, I would love to say that I planned it out perfectly in that way. But I would tell you this, like, you know, and maybe this will be helpful for someone out there right now that is feeling a little bit overwhelmed by this. But at the end of 2022, in December 2022, I had finished completely recording my album. It was done. And I was so burned out with how I was trying to make this happen. I had had some success at this point. You know, I was getting paid to do music, which seems unbelievable at the beginning. But I was so burned out and in such a bad spot mentally that I was ready to start calling people and being like, hey, man, you know, thank you for the support, but I think I'm done.
Oh,
yeah, this is true.
Oh,
and
plot twist.
Yeah. So much so that I had not ordered any merch, no albums, none of that. Like, and so on December 27th of 2022, I get a call from Mountain Stage and inviting me if I'd like to be a guest to start the 40th season. Mm. And I honestly thought it was a joke call. Like, I was like, what? Like, what? You know? And I was so, I was like, can I call you back? And I was just so emotional. I was like, what? It's like, oh my goodness. You know? And so I called back. I was like, yes, I'll be there. And they said, you don't even know the date yet. And I was like, it doesn't matter. I'll be there. You know, I was just, it gave me such new life.
Let me jump in. Audience, you heard me mention that in the intro. This is from NPR. That's what Mountain Stage is. That's what Philip's talking about. So please continue.
Yes. Yeah. And so, you know, as a writer, it's invite only, right? So as a songwriter, just like the Bluebird, it's a very nice thing to have on your record that you've been invited to do Mountain Stage. It's on every NPR station in the country, blah, blah, blah. So I go to Mountain Stage, and none of these things that happened in 2023 were even on my radar, really, in 2022. Mm. And I was ready to quit. And the week after Mountain Stage, I get a call from a producer from America's Got Talent asking me to audition. Mm. And I had turned it down the year before because I got invited to do the Bluebird, and it was the same week, and I did not want to not do the Bluebird.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like if the Bluebird calls you the first time, you say, oh, I can't make it. They don't offer you another date.
That's
it's
right.
Like, you know, you do it or you don't.
That's right.
So I thought AGT was dead, and they invited me to do it. We think this will be good for you, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, I think I'll go out there and audition. So I go to Pasadena in the spring. So then I'm like, okay, well, the album's got new life, but I have no idea when things are going to start airing and stuff like that in terms of, you know, AGT. So in that summer before AGT, you know, I win this TikTok competition. It's all online. But I needed $10,000 to finish all the album stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hard cash, you know? And I won $10,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Exactly. This is 100% a true story. And so I finish it and fund my own vinyls and stuff like that. And then I go out to Pasadena. I have a really good TV audition. They decide they're going to air it. And then I get called back for like the live semifinals. And so we had already picked a release date for the album because it's a lot of work to get all that planned out.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can get one of like 5 or 6 weeks that you're going to be on TV in these live episodes. And you're on live TV a bunch. And so where all that was life-changing for me in 2023 was that I end up getting placed on week four, whatever it was, and we had picked that week for the album drop.
Oh,
and so
gosh.
I'm on live television. I'm on NBC, 8 to 10 million viewers, Monday night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday night that week. Three nights in a row. On Thursday night at midnight, my album dropped.
Wow.
And so it was like zero to nuclear in terms of like people outside of the genre. You know, people in the genre might have known who I was, but this is just like, you know, Joe Schmo, middle American, watching NBC. And so
I love it.
Yeah, it was pretty bananagrams. And that, because it was all just this, like, you know, I thought the dream was kind of dead. I was so burned out. And I was like, I just don't know if this is really possible, honestly.
Crazy.
And then, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. So I would like to say I planned it exactly like that, but it was.
Good stuff. No, you couldn't have planned it any better. It happened the way that it was supposed to. That's awesome. That's awesome. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Detroit by singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Philip Bowen. Visit his official website at philipbowenmusic.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard us talking about his extensive music catalog. In the store section of his website, you can buy his album on vinyl. To get his music digitally, look at the bottom of philipbowenmusic.com for links, logos for the likes of Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Bandcamp. February 6th, he will be performing in Lansing, Michigan. Check the tour section of his website for dates and locations where you can go see him live. Engage with Philip on social media. He's pretty much everywhere. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, even Twitch and Discord. There are lots of logos, links at the bottom of philipbowenmusic.com for all of those. I hope you have seen by now that after all these years, I have finally joined TikTok. In fact, on New Year's Day is when I joined. It's at Now Hear This Entertainment, and I do hope that you will give a follow on there. I'm trying to be original on there, meaning content that I'm not posting elsewhere, and really aiming to give you some behind-the-scenes exclusive access to all the goings-on with the podcast as we head towards the 11-year anniversary of the show next month. I've been trying to add links to the TikTok account wherever relevant, but again, you can just search on there for at Now Hear This Entertainment. Comment on what I'm posting on there to let me know if you like what I'm creating on that platform. Philip, I want to revisit one of the plugs that I was giving out for you in there, especially since, as we just heard, I'm someone who's big on milestones and anniversaries. I mentioned that your Old Kanawha album is available on vinyl. Do I have this right, though? Did you release it on orange vinyl when it came out in 2023, but then to celebrate the one-year anniversary of it, reissue it last August on Emerald Waters vinyl?
Yeah. So I've loved doing these kind of special edition colored vinyl. It's such a huge thing. I mean, it's some of the things that people seem to enjoy the most when we have merch and stuff like that at shows and online. And so it's kind of a call out to the, you know, the river that the album is named after. And there's a line in the song Old Kanawha, which is like the title track to the album, you know, you can see the emerald waters of the Old Kanawha. So the vinyl colorist at the Record Factory did a really amazing job of like getting this kind of like sparkly green river looking, you know, green color on the vinyl. So yeah, we have that color up.
While we're still in just the first couple weeks of this new year, let's look back on 2024 and the tour that you did. Can you give us a recap on all that? Because wow, you were all over the place. Michigan, the Carolinas, West Virginia, New Mexico, Indiana, Tennessee, Colorado, Georgia. Wow.
For me, it was the most touring I've ever done. I love playing shows. I also love being dad too, you know, so I've worked really hard to try to find a balance of, you know, playing shows. I don't necessarily have a desire to be gone 100 nights a year like some of my colleagues do. No shade to anybody, but I don't want to miss their life because of my job. So we worked really hard to try to find these kind of like little tour clusters that we did. And it was my first time out west this year doing shows. So Colorado and New Mexico, we were in Idaho and stuff like that. And it was really, really just a cool experience. I mean, I learned a lot from, you know, from the travel piece of it and all the different venues and meeting some of the different co-artists and openers that we had the pleasure of playing with night in and night out. And so was a really, really awesome experience. And one of my favorite things we did was we did these kind of homecoming in the hills concerts in my hometown of Montgomery, West Virginia. We did three shows in 2 days, and we did them in my hometown. And so we tried to like kind of make a music venue out of this, one of the old college campus buildings. And we had people come from 10 different states, and it was just really, really, really special, you know, to have those shows in my hometown. And so, I'm really thankful for everybody that came out and supported this year. It was really fun.
I hear you saying we. I'm taking it these were not solo shows. So you were out on tour what? As a duo, as a trio, as a full band? What did that look like?
We had some different configurations throughout the tour. So some of them I did a solo acoustic. I really love to be able to incorporate the fiddle into my shows too. So I like to always at least have a duo. So sometimes I'll have a guitar player with me. We did a few as full band, you know, with like maybe a four piece as well. So we had anything from duo, trio to full band. And then we had a few kind of solo acoustic shows as well. So a nice mix throughout the year.
Did I see somewhere, were you on a bill with Darius Rucker?
I've got to do this the last few years, this charity event in Kansas City called the Big Slick. And I got to meet some really interesting people, these kind of really big name celebrities from Kansas City who put on this event every year, like Paul Rudd and Jason Sudeikis, Eric Stonestreet, Heidi Gardner, some people like that. And so through all this music stuff, they had found me and invited me to be a part of this. And so the first year that I did it, you know, they try to just put you up on the stage in as many ways possible. And so the capping event is at the T-Mobile Center Saturday nights on that weekend. And it's all to raise money for Children's Mercy Hospital and fight, you know, childhood cancer. And so Darius Rucker was going to be there. And so Eric Stonestreet called me, and he was an actor on Modern Family. He's a really amazing guy. And he's like, hey, man, do you think you'd ever want to play a couple with Darius Rucker? I was like, what? Of course. And so he's like, well, he's right here. And I was like, oh, okay. And so, you know, he's like, you know, Wagon Wheel? I was like, man, I got you. No problem. And so it was really fun. I did some of my own stuff too. So I got to share a bill with Darius and play at the T-Mobile Center with him. It was a really, really awesome experience.
Too cool. Too cool. We have talked a couple times about the old Kanaw album from August of 2023, but now we're in January of 2025. And as I understand it, you're moving forward with a new music project. Is that right? And if so, what are you at liberty to tell us about whatever that is?
Yeah, so I'm very excited for this. You know, as things have grown, I've really been trying hard to build a team and work on things that would make sense for the next set of releases that we do. And so in the month of January here, we're going to start the process of recording a bunch of new stuff. In mid-January, I'll have been up in, you know, New York recording. At the end of January, we're going to be down in Nashville recording. And I'm really excited to be working with Cloverdale Records. So it'll be my first label supported effort, which I'm really, really excited about. It's been quite a journey. You know, it's really exciting once you do get some interest from these different kind of Nashville machines, but it's all about finding the right fit, you know, for you and whatever makes the most sense for you, because you work so hard to build it. And so I've been working with them on the management side for about 6 months. And so that's all kind of kicking off in terms of the recording in the month of January to kind of start the new year.
Fantastic.
And so got lots of stuff cooking, and the goal will be to have another kind of similar size effort. I'd love the album to be kind of landing that 10 to 12 song range.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's
Fantastic.
Kind of where we're at right now.
And audience, as I always say, all the more incentive for you to follow the guest, in this case, Philip Bowen, online, so that you can see when he starts announcing things that are a little bit more tangible, meaning a little bit more definite, a little bit more projected in terms of when you can look for these releases. Philip, I want to revisit something that I alluded to earlier, which is all the collaborations you've done. As I mentioned, just looking on iTunes alone, I saw countless songs where you are a feature on someone else's track. To what do you attribute being able to be involved with so, so many collaborations in a matter of just a few years?
Well, you know, that's something that I'm always honored to get asked to do, especially when it's something that somebody has written. And, you know, when you've written a song, you know, it's like a baby. You know, you're like, oh, man, you just love it so much and you want to see it brought to life in the best possible way. And so when I get asked to join on an effort like that, I'm always very honored. And I hope that what I bring to the table when I collaborate with somebody is that I can show them that, like, hey, I'm gonna try to love this as much as you do. Like, I want to bring this to life in a very special way and have it be special for all of us. And so I just attribute a lot of this business, quote unquote, just like whatever you do, listener, for your job or your career, so much of it is relationship building.
Yeah.
Just like a lot of things in life. And I have been so fortunate to meet a lot of wonderful people. And I just, honestly, I've really tried hard to just kind of show up authentically anytime I get a chance to work with folks. And whether I get invited to be an opener for somebody that I just am stoked to be there. And a lot of times those kind of conversations have happened organically, where maybe I meet somebody at a writer's thing or at a show backstage somewhere. I get invited out to go meet someone, and then it kind of organically happens. I'll get a text one day like, hey, would you like to do this or that? Sure. Let's see if we can make it work. And so a lot of it's just being open to opportunities and then being able to be kind of humble and flexible when you're asked to do something, and just try to put forth your best effort every time. And so I've got to work on some really cool stuff, and I'm always honored when I get to do that.
Well, and let's face it, audience, you've heard me say over and over and over on this show about how crucial it is that you build relationships and then you stick with them. You don't meet someone and then they don't hear from you for 3 years. You got to build it. So obviously that's a big part of it, but let's face it. Your top five songs on Spotify alone have been streamed close to 5.9 million times. You have 1 million followers on TikTok. You've got 4.5 million combined video views on YouTube. So I think, yes, the relationship building is super important. But obviously, you know, give yourself credit. Give yourself a pat on the back, Philip. Your stock has risen. People just are finding out who you are now. And I'm sure some of this is incoming, where the phone is ringing, the email box is filling up, as opposed to the time when you do have to really scratch and claw your way to find anything. And yes, as good a job as you're doing with networking and with relationship building and seeing what's available at different events that you're at, I'm going to say that you've been rewarded with some of this has to be inbound inquiries that you're getting.
Yeah, thank you very much. And for sure, you know, I think one of my favorite things that someone has said to me, I remember my grandpa Bill and my papa Bill said to me, this is years ago, before I graduated high school, and he would say this quite often. He was a very avid gardener, and he would tell me all the time, he'd be like, just remember, Philip, the day you plant the seed is not the day you eat the fruit.
Mm.
And I love that. I try to think of that when I have down days, you know, when I have slow times. And I think that is so true, because there are plenty of times in this business, even when things are going well, that it's such a comparative industry. Maybe you see a friend get something that you really wanted, like they get their Opry debut, or they get this or that, or they're playing this show, and you're like, oh man, I'd love to do that. And it's really hard to lose sight of maybe some of the progress that you've made or things like that. And so I just try to be mindful of stuff like that. You know, just keep working, keep planting seeds, and then you know, the days you get to eat the fruit is always a good day. That's for sure.
And you strike me as someone who is pretty much always going to say yes, with very rare exceptions.
I'll try for sure.
Yeah. You mentioned about the new music project starting recording this month, but what are you excited about for 2025 as far as your music career, obviously?
I'm excited for something that used to scare me a whole lot, which is the unknown. And that can sound like kind of a blanket coverall, but, you know, one of the really exciting things about this business is that you never know. Some of the coolest things that happen are the stuff that you didn't really have insight into. And in 2022, 23, and 24, some of my favorite things that happened in each of those years are things that happened that I didn't really have a clear vision on, or I didn't know that I was on somebody's radar for X, Y, or Z. And so I'm really excited for those type of things. And of course, I'm really excited for something new, which is I've never done any kind of like label supported project before. So I'm excited to see how that goes as well, because I just haven't gone down that path with like real, honest to God, like distribution behind my efforts. And so I'm excited to see kind of how that goes and insight into a little bit of a different process too. And so I'm excited to see where all that lands.
Yeah, understandably. We are going to close today with another one of Philip's original songs, one called Dogwoods. Before I let you go, when we play that track, Philip, share with the audience first all about this track, if you would, please.
This track is based on an old legend we have in Appalachia, the legend of the dogwood tree. And I wrote this kind of in honor of my grandmother on my dad's side. And, she used to always, we'd take these walks around town, and she would love the springtime when the dogwoods would bloom. And she'd be like, look at those flowers, Philip. They remind me of Jesus. And she'd tell me this, like, old legend of the dogwood tree. And you can look that up if you're ever just kind of bored and you want to look up some of these old kind of folk tales and stuff like that. Mm. And so I love to write outside. That's one of my favorite places to write. And so I was home just visiting some family after a show, and it was this time of year. And I was just kind of inspired by this memory that I had. And this song just always holds a special place in my heart. It always is kind of a cool moment at live shows too. People seem to really enjoy this tune. And so, that's kind of the basis and the story behind this song. It's based on an old Appalachian legend, and I hope you enjoy it.
Good stuff. Good stuff. This was so great. Philip, thank you for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, Bruce, me too. A real pleasure, and thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet. You bet. And audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Philip Bowen. Again, do visit his official website at philipbowenmusic.com. As I said before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard us talking a lot about Philip's extensive music catalog. The Old Kanawha album is available on vinyl through the store section of his website. If you're looking to get his music digitally instead, look at the bottom of philipbowenmusic.com for links, logos for Apple Music, Amazon Music, Spotify, and Bandcamp. February 6th, he will be performing in Lansing, Michigan. Check the tour section of his website for dates and locations where you can go see him live. Engage with Philip on social media. He is pretty much everywhere. This morning, I followed him on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Don't forget to subscribe to his YouTube channel, watch and like the videos on there. He is even on Twitch and Discord. There are lots of logos, links at the bottom of philipbowenmusic.com for all of those. For that matter, tell Philip that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really appreciate you tuning in to the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you're still with us at the end of the episode, I'm guessing you're enjoying what you're hearing, so thank you for sticking around. If you would like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen week after week, year after year, almost 11 years with no breaks, I've got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you will spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor, and there's no brand behind it. It's simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. That's going to do it for episode 571. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Philip Bowen. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Dogwoods.
Some days we're colder than a blackberry winter. Some nights we're hotter than Judgment Day. Most of the time we live on the right side of the middle. Not the best and not the worst, and that's okay. And on the days and nights when our hearts need reminded of forever and the promises we've made, we'll take a walk under the pink and ivory blossoms. We'll stop and we'll smile, and then she'll say how the flowers reminded her of Jesus. She tells a story every Easter about the crosses on their necks and little crowns on their heads. She said, I love you like the dogwoods love the spring. Babe, I love you like the dogwoods love the spring. And there ain't nothing like old time to heal your sorrow. And there's nothing like the clock to bring back pain. Who we were and who we are and all that's changed. changing? Is there nothing that can ever stay the same? Like the flowers that reminded her of Jesus, she tells a story every Easter about the crosses on their necks and little crowns on their heads. She said, I love you like the dogwoods love the spring. Babe, I love you like the dogwoods love the spring. And who can say why the heart bends like a willow? And who can say why the soul turns upside down? Both say that we won't break, but even if we do, it's a promise like an anchor to the ground. Just like the flowers that reminded her of Jesus, she tells a story every Easter about the crosses on their necks and little crowns on their heads. She said, I love you like the dogwoods love the spring. Babe, I love you like the dogwoods.